Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah.
Sports in your face. Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think the entire defense, I think the secondary, you know, there was a few times when I was watching that, you know, you got to make Tom blink. And if you make him blink and have to go to a second read, you got a chance. But if you let him, you know, rip it to the first guy he looks at, it's going to be a long day. And so I think, you know, being able to combine the rush, different patterns and the coverage that we, you know, were able to execute, I think that all goes a long way. It's a coordination with 11 guys and a good call.
That's Vrabel on how you beat Brady. Take away his first read. Mike? Boy, that's not the way it used to be. Brady used to be able to go to his second, third guy, see the field better than anybody. Check down, go to the backside, find the matchup. Go ahead, take away my first read. The Pats have never been a first read team. In fact, that's their strength. There isn't a first read to take away because Brady will diagnose the matchup before the snap. So if they turned into a first-read kind of team, is Brady turned into a first-read kind of quarterback? Is he locking in on certain guys and that's that? Is that what Vrabel's implying there?
I mean, maybe. I also think that maybe this is where the shortage of personnel comes into play. Like, the fact that in the past, you know, he was able to adjust and whatever receivers were second, third, fourth on the depth chart could adjust with him, and now they can't. So maybe Vrabel sees some of that. But I also think that some of it's Brady. Like, I don't think you should let Brady off the hook either. You know, to me, they kind of go hand in hand. Whatever it is, the passing game really hasn't been right all year. It hasn't. Not the way they like to do it.
There's no question about it. All right, back to your thoughts. Jay in the van, what are your thoughts?
All right, so one is Vrabel with pressure up the middle, right? You're 100% right. Like, that's exactly how he won that game with Brady, okay? And you always say guards don't matter, Felger. But in Brady's world, I believe it does matter. Like a guy like Logan Makins, I felt like he really gave, you know, Tom what he needed in certain situations with that kind of pressure.
So
go ahead.
Well, no, you know what? That's a fair point. Brady, the middle of the pocket is so important for Brady to have a
really
firm
is.
Middle. It is. But, I mean, you could say they've addressed it. I mean, they drafted a guard in the first round this year. And Shaq Mason was a relatively high-drafted guy, too. And so I actually think they've invested at those spots.
They did, even though they had the injury, though. I mean, you know, the guy doesn't even play. So, but, yeah. I mean, you're right. They did invest that, and obviously they do know that there's an issue there, and he needs that, you know. Number two is Maz is 100% right where the offense doesn't look right. And really, it stems all with Gronk. I mean, when Gronk is Gronk, that whole thing looks 100% different, and it's just, it hasn't been there.
Okay, I mean, when Gronk is himself, even the games he's played, has he been a game breaker? Has
no,
he opened
no.
things up for you?
No, he hasn't been the same guy. Go ahead, Mark.
No, that's it. Week one, that was it. That was the last time he had a touchdown. So the last time that Gronk actually looked like Rob Gronkowski.
Now, I mean, he hasn't been a factor really for the whole season.
So now you got all these guys voted on Sunday. Kern said it on Sunday. Others are alluding to it that this is it for Rob Gronkowski. This is it. It's a swan song. He's not coming back next year. That his salary next year suddenly isn't so team friendly. Like, you've been getting Gronk at a good discount here the last couple of years. You know, he's underpaid in terms of he hasn't been the highest paid tight end, and he hasn't been paid like a receiver. Like, his production would you know, you would think that, you know, you'd have to pay those kind of dollars. You haven't paid them. Well, now he's missing games. He's not the same guy when he's on the field, and now he's not worth the $12 million. $12 million was a break last year. This year and next year, it's an overpayment. And that next year, you get to a point where you say, Rob, we're not going to bring it back unless you restructure down. Never mind adding incentives. Unless you restructure down, we're not going to bring you back. At which point, Rob says, then I quit. Right? And that's sort of what these guys are projecting now, that Gronkowski's done.
Yeah, scary, right? Because, again, Bill wanted to move him.
But
Bill wanted to trade him.
Bill doesn't run the team anymore. Tommy does. Here's Sean in Attleboro. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I love your show, first of all. Tom Brady did suck yesterday. He really did. I mean, he didn't seem to do much right, but there are also points in the game where other guys seem to mess up. Josh Gordon fell along the left sideline on one play. The ball went over his head.
That's right.
Gordon dropped a couple balls like you guys were talking about before.
Hollister had a big block, had a big drop.
Yep. The pass where he hit Edelman in the helmet, it looked like a laser throw, but Edelman wasn't even looking for it. That throw kind of pissed me off.
Hmm.
And then the one guy that seems to be reliable right now, Dorsett, doesn't seem to get on the field, which I don't understand.
Okay, so that's Bill. Good point, Sean. Go ask Tom. Does Tom dictate what personnel is on the field? I mean, I don't know. Maybe he does. But I don't. To me, it feels like once the players are on the field and the play is called, then Tom sees the field and goes where he wants to go to with the ball. Does he actually say, Bill, I need Josh out here and not Philip Dorsett? And I agree, Dorsett should get a little more run. He's a little more technical with his route running, a little more shifty, which is like more of a Patriot guy. Gordon's not a Patriots kind of guy. He's not. He's just not. The Patriots are not a 20-yard back shoulder down the sideline kind of team. That's not what Brady does. That's not who he is. He wants the little guys that get open over the middle and short, intermediate, short, little shifty guys. Dorsett feels to me like a better fit. And I'm no huge fan of Dorsett. I just say stylistically, it feels like more like what they've done in the past.
He showed some promise early in the year, I thought, with exactly what the kind of stuff you're talking about, the route running and stuff like that. So I don't know. I was just looking it up. He only played 15 snaps yesterday, 23%.
Should I go ask Tom about that one, Bill? Does Tom put Dorsett on the field or not?
Barely. I mean, nine targets in his last six games. The last time he was really productive in any game was the win against Miami.
Yeah, you'd have to ask Tom.
All right, I'll go ask Tom. I'll ask Tom why he doesn't put Philip Dorsett on the field more. Steven Bilrica, go ahead, please.
All right, this question is to Maz and Maz only, so Maz, don't look for help. Per order of Felga, our number one receiver, Edelman, 32 years old, coming off of steroids and an ACL tear. Gordon coming up with a hamstring and a hangover. Then on the other side, we have Dorsett, who can't make the field for Indy, and Hogan, an average number three. A rookie running back coming off of multiple knee problems, right? A patchwork offensive line with a blindside tackle for Brady that's basically useless.
Oh, he's been good. Trent Brown's been good. I'm sorry. I'm jumping in.
Sorry. Hear me out for the end. This is a question. Multiple choice for Maz and Maz alone.
Just go!
All right. With White being the only polished offensive player, has Brady overachieved to this point, or is he just that much better at the age of 41 than quarterbacks like Rodgers or anybody else in the league?
Okay, so you're asking two different questions, Steve. Like, to this stage in his career, of course he's gone on longer than anybody thought he would. But at the same time, the way you rattle it off, he's playing out there with the Sisters of the Poor. So you're telling me Edelman's of no use to him? None. Edelman's of no use. Even though he was 9 of 12 on throws to Edelman yesterday. Tell me Edelman's useless. And Hogan's completely useless? Because I'll find you some comments where Hogan was open, according to Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal. So Hogan, to me, is at times should be a guy that he can go to. And did you see the third down throw to White yesterday on the sideline when White was open?
How about the slant to White on the first or second series where Brady threw it a yard behind him?
I mean, so look, in this guy's mind, Brady's not accountable for anything. Okay, that's all. In that guy's mind, Brady's untouchable. To which I would say, what are we even having the conversation for then? So I'm not telling you Brady's the biggest problem on the team. He wasn't good yesterday, though. He looked to me like he saw the rush coming in. There were a lot of balls into the ground. There were a lot of balls that were short. There were a lot of bad throws. And you know what I'm going to do just for you? I am going to go online, look them all up, and I saw a little highlight package of them in the broadcast, and we'll stick them on our Facebook page for you tomorrow just so you can see them. How do you like that?
Steve. Tony and Sonam, hi.
Good God. How you doing? I got a couple of things for you, so have a little patience. Number one, a question for you. Have these coaches that are not with the team anymore, did they make Belichick or did Belichick make them?
Belichick made them.
Well, okay, so these coaches are going away with other teams that are inferior to this team, and they're kicking the hell out of them. You get coaches that have beaten Brady.
Okay, but Vrabel's not those guys. Vrabel never coached under Bill. He just played under him. So, different category.
Okay, but he played with Brady, okay? And that's the key. And these guys have a pattern now of how to beat this guy. That's number one. Number two, you can say all you want about a missing practice and everything. This is Brady's swan song. Brady will not be the quarterback next year. And that also...
Yeah, you'd have to ask Tom.
Tony, that can't...
And this asking Tom stuff, what do you want Brady Belichick to say? He doesn't call the plays. Brady calls the plays.
Okay, well, Brady...
Yeah, you'd have to ask Tom.
Brady didn't call the plays. It's up to him to go with the ball where he feels is the best place to go with it, but he didn't call the plays. That comes from McDaniels. McDaniels calls the plays. Then Brady determines where it goes on the field.
There are ways that Bill can cover for Brady on that. There's ways that he can cover
for. If you ask Bill about any other specific player or facet of the game, he said, I have to go look at the film. I just got off the field 5 minutes ago. I got to look at the film.
I mean, anytime you ask him about defense, he says it's team defense.
And then when he's asked today, you'd say, well, none of it was good. We didn't play well. We didn't coach well. Special teams off. So it all sucked. Do you ever hear him say, go ask Stephon?
No.
Bill, how'd you feel about your run defense? Well, go ask Dante. Have you ever heard him say that?
No.
Offensive line gives up a sack. Go ask Trent. Go ask David. You ever heard him say that?
No.
Okay, so I heard him say it about Brady yesterday.
Other than when the air was out of the footballs, and he said you might want to ask Brady about that.
I was doing all I could not to go there, Maz, but thank you for breaking the seal.
Yeah, it's a point of reference, that's all.
Seriously, since when does Bill just drop it on someone else's lap like that?
He's not afraid with Tom. Paul in the car. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. Big fan. All I want for my birthday is 20 seconds and I'll hang up. To use a Thugger and Mazism, Vrabel makes it move a little bit. I would trade Bill Belichick for Mike Vrabel right now, except Tennessee wouldn't do that deal for the current version of Bill Belichick. And it's a miracle that Josh Gordon made it to the bye week. I feel like Johnny Milligan asked, are you scared of Josh Gordon having 2 weeks off? Yes. Thanks for the time, guys.
Paul, thank you. Stop. Pump the brakes, would you please? I think Bill and the staff has actually coached their ass off this year. I think it's been mostly coaching this year, frankly. How'd you get to 7-3? It ain't Brady. He's been good, but he hasn't carried you to these games. I think your coaching has carried you to these games. How many, even yesterday, the plays that Brady hit were open, wide open. The times they did get Edelman deep on crossers, wide open, no more than 20 yards of them. The trick plays, while I think it's covering up their deficiencies and is a bad sign, they've all worked. Every single trick play they've dialed up has worked. The coaching won you the Green Bay game. Got 7 points on a hurry up. You got another 7 points on a flea flicker, or 3 points on a flea flicker, another 7 points on a double pass, and another 7 on a fake screen. All designed, all easy throws. I think the coaching staff's coached their ass off this year. He didn't have them ready to go yesterday, that I'll give you. They did not have that ready to go. On Vrabel, very likable guy, though. Meaning, he's just the attitude, the way he carries himself, the cockiness, or that just, there's something that's very likable about that. And, I think if you're a Tennessee fan, you should be happy with Mike Vrabel. But would you please, with the Bill Belichick thing, Belichick's why you're here, where you are here in the first place, meaning 7-3 and still in the picture. Here's just a word from our sponsor, and we are right back here on Felger and Maz. I want to get to, this is more of a GM thing, really, but the genius of Bill Belichick and Stephon Gilmore. Let's get to that next.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Lewis to the right of Mariota. He takes the snap. He retreats 3 steps. He's in the pocket. He launches a long ball. High lob to Davis, left side in the end zone. Caught for a Tennessee touchdown. A flag comes down after the tackle by Gilmore. But there's another beautiful throw by Mariota to Corey Davis at the Patriots' expense.
That ball hung. That's a really good throw. Are you kidding me? His team is up 7-14 to 3 on you. It's a double move. Gets him on a slant go. Gilmore's better than that. Slant go. Better wake up.
Mariota waits on the snap on 3rd and 14. He drops back. He moves up. He's under pressure. He throws off balance to the near side, and the ball is juggled by Davis, rolling across the near sideline. They say he caught it with control at the Patriots' 20-yard line in front of Stephon Gilmore yet again.
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. Gilmore right now cannot handle Davis. That's an easy throw for the quarterback. Loses him to the outside. There's pressure. He slides up 3rd and forever, and you allow them to keep the football here. Gilmore's got to be there at that play. I mean, you're paying that guy that much money. 3rd and forever. He's got to stay in his hip pocket. He's done it all year.
Stephon Gilmore. The Patriots fans got a little bit ahead of themselves on the 7-2 record with the Patriots. Boy, did they get ahead of themselves on this pair specifically. he's been good, but the way and I don't mean just fans. I guess he was rated highly by Pro Football Focus, and everyone's sort of, you know, pumping this guy's tires. Said it's not like he's given up his share of touchdowns this year. When I watch the games, I don't know. Some teams stay away from him, but not everyone stays away from him. I don't know. I just felt like he's had a nice year, but all of a sudden, this guy's Darrell Revis or Ty Law. I've never felt that about Stephon Gilmore. And you know who agrees with me? Mike Vrabel. He went right at him. Right at him from the first play. And there were a couple. So that, you know, we heard all week, oh, Malcolm Butler bites on these double moves. Malcolm Butler peaks and bites on these double moves. What do the Titans do? First half, double move, Stephon Gilmore. Loses the man, gets a PI, and gives up a touchdown. Trifecta. Joker, joker, joker. All three. Bites on the double move, still interferes with them, still gives up the touchdown. Nice.
Hat trick.
And then the play there, the second play we just played there, second quarter, third and 14. Third and freaking 14. And 84 again beats him to the sideline. And Gilmore's really not competitive on the play. And so the first takeaway is that, boy, that has Vrabel's fingerprints all over it. You're going to talk all week about how we're stupid for signing Malcolm Butler? How's your guy? Well, let's see. Let's see how your guy is. And he challenged him and beat him badly. So that has Vrabel's fingerprints all over. But the story is also on Gilmore. He's not the lockdown guy that you've been portrayed or has been portrayed. He's just not. He's good. But he's not great. Because that Davis kid is... feels like a nice player, but is he anything special?
No, he's talented, but he's been an underachiever. I mean, again,
we're not talking about DeAndre Hopkins here. He's a decent enough player, and Gilmore could not cover him the whole game.
Okay,
that third and 14 was that was such a backbreaker.
A huge play, okay? And then they walk in for a touchdown to make it 24-10, and then you can't score points on your last possession in the second quarter, and it didn't feel like the clock was really well managed there. You know, you didn't even get a field goal attempt off. You didn't even get a throw into the end zone off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go three and out on your first possession of the third. Talk about the reverse hairpin turn. But anyway, Gilmore. So Vrabel exposes Gilmore. And on the other side,
oh, wait till they do that. Wait till you see what they do to Malcolm Butler.
Did you even notice him in the game? I told you, guys, this is one thing I did get right. I told you, Vrabel was not going to expose Malcolm Butler.
He was on Hogan most of the day.
He was not going to allow Malcolm Butler to get exposed and get embarrassed in this game. He was going to protect him / hide him. And he did. He was like the nickel corner, played like 50 snaps. You barely noticed the kid. Barely noticed him. And so that's how that matchup went. And then afterward, again, continuing this thing, Malcolm Butler. So Deion Lewis took a steaming dump all over you. Yeah, it was personal. That's what happens when you go cheap. You get your ass kicked.
Hell yeah, it's personal. That's what happens when you go cheap. You get your ass kicked.
Yeah, okay, that wasn't Malcolm Butler. That wasn't Malcolm Butler. I've told you this on Malcolm Butler, too. They've signed the paperwork. They've come to an agreement. You're not talking about me. We're not talking about you. And boy, after the game, just the bouquets. They had this embrace on the field after the game. Belichick and Butler embracing on the field after the game. Butler said, quote, he said he appreciated me for playing for him for 4 years, and I said the same thing back. He told me good luck on the rest of the season and told me to keep fighting like he knows I will. He said it's nothing personal. Before the game, on Friday in the locker room, or Thursday in the locker room, you know what Butler said to Belichick? He said, quote, that's my guy, man. That's my guy.
Right.
My guy. The guy that benched him in front of the world, in front of 100 million people, as he's heading into free agency, publicly embarrassing him. Now Butler is saying, that's my guy? And after the game, they're embracing. And Butler is saying, he told me he appreciated me for... You know what Bill really said to him? We're good, Malcolm, right? We're not talking about this crap. We went easy on you. We didn't even throw on you, okay, dude? So you got your money. We didn't even throw at you. We're all good, right? That's what I think all those conversations are about. Get this. Ian Rappaport reported yesterday, get this, that the Patriots were prepared to sign Malcolm Butler last offseason if he didn't get what he was seeking in free agency. According to Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, the Pats were in fact interested in re-signing Butler at the right price last offseason after a full year after they had paid Stephon Gilmore. Rappaport, citing sources, says the Pats, quote, informed Butler's agent Derek Simpson to reach out to them if he didn't get an offer to his liking. already paying top corner Stephon Gilmore, the Patriots could have paid Butler around $10 million a year. After deeming him not good enough to play a single defensive snap in the most important game of the year, you're going to turn around and pay him $10 million a year? There's only one way to describe that, Jimmy. What is that?
Hush money.
Thank you. Explain that to me.
You got me.
You won't play the guy a single defensive snap in the most important game of the year, but then you're going to turn around and pay him $10 million a year?
Do you believe it?
Hush money.
Do you believe it?
Yes.
I don't.
I do.
I don't. I think that one was leaked out to make Bill look good.
Why does that make Bill look good?
Because he's willing to let bygones be bygones and bring the player back. Like, you know, it was just about that game, one game. It was the matchups and everything else, but we still think he's a good player and we're going to bring him back. We were ready to do it, you know. See, I think it's bull crap, but go ahead.
This is so unlike Bill. This is so unlike him. They've screwed each other so many different ways. I mean, face it. I mean, Malcolm Butler deserves a lot of responsibility for the way it all ended, too, because his play fell off. You know, they signed Gilmore, and Butler let it get to him. It crawled inside his head, and he couldn't take it. He couldn't take the fact that they had signed another guy. And so Butler had his problems, too. And he had his issues off the field as well. Like, he wasn't a perfect Patriot either in terms of meetings or, you know, you've heard Mike Giardian report, others report, that he's borderline off the reservation to begin with. So Butler acted unprofessionally. His play fell off. So Butler screwed the Patriots. And then they get to the ultimate game, and Belichick gives them the ultimate screw job, and now they're saying they love each other, and they're supporting each other, and they're hugging each other on the field after the game, and the Pats are ready to give them $10 million a year? What? Would you please? Only one way to describe it. Only one way. Jimmy, I'm sorry. I need you again.
Hush money.
Thank you. So he got it from Tennessee, not from New England. Either way, Butler was made whole, and he ain't saying a thing about the team. And the team ain't seeing anything about him. And that's how we're going to go forward. It's all been settled. Deion Lewis didn't get the same, you know.
Was he supposed to get more hush money?
As personal. That's what happens when you go cheap. You get your ass kicked.
So Deion Lewis.
So he didn't get enough hush money.
No, he didn't. He certainly didn't. He didn't sign the NDA.
That is going to be one of the great drops for years to come.
Hell yeah, as personal. That's what happens when you go cheap. You get your ass kicked.
A little strong. Here's Murray in the latest, then right to your phones.
Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's a good football team that we played today and that we beat. Very fortunate. Those players, just like me and Dean and everybody else that spent time there, John, you learned a lot from the people there, from Mr. Kraft down to Bill and his staff. You know, we're together here with the Titans, and we're really proud to be a part of this organization. You know, I'll say this, the one thing that Bill always said was that it's an honor and a privilege to coach and play in this league. I'll never forget that as a player, and then now to be able to be in this position as a head coach in this league, that he always treated it with a lot of respect, the fact that we work in this league and the history that's behind it.
Mike Vrabel from yesterday. I don't think Mike Vrabel has an axe to grind against you. I think he's a super competitive guy and is a ball-busting prick. And that's what the thing was yesterday with that double pass. Putting that right back in your face and then his comments afterwards is just ball-buster. But I don't think he hates you. I don't think he's an axe to grind. He enjoyed beating you. But that's different than someone we should have mentioned last week, and he just mentioned there, Dean, meaning Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator. Dean Pease does have an axe to grind against you. He feels he was unfairly pushed out here, unfairly singled out. And when he left, it was sort of portrayed as a retirement. It wasn't. It was really a firing. And he's still in the league. I don't know. I can't remember Dean's last year, but it's been like 10 years, it feels like.
He went out when Patricia came in, right?
I just can't remember exactly the time.
Anyway,
I think 09 was it.
So he went on to Baltimore, beat you a couple times when he was the defensive coordinator. That's another guy who knows how to defend Tom Brady and has had success against you in the past. So we left out Dean Pease last week. His fingerprints were over that thing yesterday,
yeah,
too.
No question about it. Like, and he was part of Rex Ryan's staff, too, right? Dean Pease was. So, and Rex had a reputation.
With the Jets?
With Baltimore, I thought.
He went to Baltimore after you, I think.
Well, I thought he was with Rex, but anyway, go ahead.
But either way. So there's Dean Pease, the Titans defensive coordinator. So I think he was a factor in that game yesterday as well. Get back to your phones here, as promised. Max in Connecticut. Go ahead, Max.
Hey, I just want to know your thoughts on our third down play calling, because I don't know why we're throwing the ball up to Josh Gordon on the sideline and Hogan's nowhere to be found. And do you think this has to do with not having Amendola anymore?
Oh, it doesn't help. Amendola, another guy that Brady trusts and get open short and be there. I mean, my God, how many times has Brady looked at Amendola in big games and big spots?
Could have used him yesterday.
Absolutely could use Danny Amendola. 100%. I don't know if that changes the ultimate outcome, but that's a guy Brady misses. Don't tell me he doesn't miss that guy. Because that's a guy, Amendola never put up big numbers wire to wire. It was never a constant threat for all 17 weeks. But in a big spot, in a big game, Brady looked there.
Boy, that one didn't even occur to me. And yesterday was a day exactly the kind of game where you could have used him. No Gronk, you have Edelman on the field, and if you have Amendola out there, maybe Hogan's more effective too. Because don't you think like Gordon's kind of on his own island?
Oh, please.
Like Gordon just runs one play and everybody else runs something else.
Well, it feels like Hogan's on his own island too, because with Amendola, even if he had a drop or there was a miscue there, Brady's still going to go back to him because he trusts him. He was one of the guys that was part of the Brady circle of trust. Hogan? It feels like, especially this year, if he misses him or he has a drop, Brady doesn't go back to him at all. He didn't even look his way.
Pat's 3 of 15 on third down. 3 of 15. And he had Edelman. Edelman had 12 targets in the game.
And he completed 9 of them.
And I was going to say, and it was efficient.
Yeah, 75%.
So he had Edelman, and he had White. And you go 3 for 15 on third down. I understand Gronkowski, you're going to miss him, but that you shouldn't go to 20% third down. You should go to 30, 40%.
Yeah, that felt like the first time all year that James White was a complete non-factor in the game.
And you know why?
Because Vrabel knew it.
Absolutely. First play of the game.
First play of the game.
First play of the game, Brady swung it out to White and pop. He got popped immediately at the line of scrimmage. And right there I said, oh, so someone is actually going to decide to cover 28. Someone actually figured out they like to go to 28 and early as well to get Brady going. And they were right there. So whether that's Vrabel or Pease, finally, someone actually just looked at some tape.
Yeah, it seemed like they had a clue. It's funny. I had the same thought. I was like, oh, no, they're saying no, not today. Not this. We're not going to be the other stupid teams in this league that let you do this the whole game whenever Brady has to check down.
I mean, really, early in that game, again, they went right at Gilmore. And White gets drilled in the backfield, basically, behind the line of scrimmage. Right out of the chute.
Tony in New Hampshire, what do you got for us?
Yeah, hi, guys. Yeah, I don't mean to reiterate on what you guys have just been saying, but it's pretty hard to beat a team when they have your playbook. These guys have been on the other side of the ball practicing against these Patriots for the last 3-4 years. Logan Ryan, Butler, Lewis with an axe to grind. They were all over this Patriots team and spread it throughout their whole week telling this team their playbook.
So does that justify the loss? Tony, does that justify the loss in your mind?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't justify the sucky poor play that this team looked yesterday. Okay. I mean, it was pitiful.
All right, but fair enough.
It's also hard to play against a team that knows every one of your next moves.
So I think that Vrabel and that staff has a certain advantage. It shouldn't be an advantage over you. It's just, I mean, because you're just better than them. That's a mediocre team there in Tennessee. So while it gives them a little boost, it shouldn't be the difference. And it shouldn't. How does that explain that they have institutional knowledge against you? So fine, they're going to be competitive because of that knowledge. How does that explain the fact that you weren't ready to go to start? We're not ready to go. You weren't ready to play that game. From the opening kickoff, you weren't ready. And then you quit midway through the fourth quarter. What does that have to do with them knowing your playbook?
It doesn't.
So, like, to me, that's outside of Vrabel's institutional knowledge against you.
And again, I go back to Gilmore versus Corey Davis. You wanted that matchup. You're the Patriots. You wanted that match. That's the one you wanted. You chose that.
So did Vrabel, it turns out.
You put Gilmore on Corey Davis and says, we'll take this one all day long.
And so would Tennessee.
Yeah, and they said, fine, no problem. And then they picked you apart on it.
Eddie in Indianapolis. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, guys, give me 35 seconds. Brady isn't getting hurt for this 2019 bill put together. I think Bill's a GM can make the head coach job much easier, but he refuses to. And I'm not one to say that I told you so, but I told you guys so. I called after Green Bay and said this team sucked compared to some of the other Pats teams from the past. And in fairness, you guys said that my point was a little strong, but you guys generally agreed with some of what I was saying in terms of how something kind of stunk of 2009. But during the game, this Titans game, I was following Mari's tweets during the game, and I think he and the rest of you guys have finally reached the conclusion that I reached after the Packers game, which is, you know, they kind of suck. We don't measure this team against the rest of the NFL, but against other Pats teams, and I'm just shocked at how many people thought that they were going to win this game easily, as Maz said.
So, I think we all agree with that. The many people bought in terms of, again, this is comparing the Patriots to themselves, bought in that this is just, you know, business as usual. Extended training camp in September, shut everybody up, go on a big winning streak in November, here we go, and it's the same old thing. I don't know why many people fell into that. Just
because they saw 7-2.
Yeah.
That was it. It was 7-2. That's all they saw. They saw the 7-2 and said, this is like every other year the Patriots win games. They didn't examine or focus on how they were winning them. Like, I don't know how you overlook in the Green Bay game that they had to execute trick plays to score points on the Packers.
Yeah, I had concerns offensively still, even after that game. But defensively, I felt so much better because I felt like they, especially in that second half, they willed that team to a win. It was the defense was really the reason that the Patriots beat the Packers. That's why I felt better about it.
So I felt better about the coverage in that game too, Murray. I did. I mean, I'm not rewriting history here. But offensively, they had to rely on some trickery.
Yeah.
And so now they're going on the road, and I just think if you look at the patterns, forget about the one game. They've played like ass on the road all year long. This is not anything new in that regard.
It's a troubling sign.
That has happened all year long.
That speaks to their makeup or fortitude or that intangible that they're usually so good with.
Mental toughness. Right, you go on the road, everything's against you, the crowd's against you, and you have to be able to focus and fight through it. And they can't.
They didn't yesterday, didn't show up, and then quit in the fourth quarter, and I would include the quarterback with that analysis. We'll pick that up on the other side in our long commercial-free segment.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The pressure you faced all defensively, just they seemed to have a lot of pass rush, some sacks, I don't know what the final numbers were. What do you attribute that to? Was it burying their fronts, good coverage, that allowed the pressure to get to?
Yeah, I think it's probably a mix of both. You know, good rush, good coverage. They had a good plan. I thought they did a good job executing it. You play from behind all day. You know, it's not very ideal. And we just didn't play well enough to make enough plays to ever score the touchdowns we needed to. But it was just a bad day.
Okay, so the pressure. He keeps being asked about the pressure. Sacked three times, hit three more. Statistically, really not that... It wasn't like that epic of a beatdown. And I think if you go back and watch it, and, you know, the NFL Network has shown some highlight packages here, Maz. Brady avoided a lot of it by just bailing out of the play, by quitting on the play. There were so many plays where he did not really fully step into the throw and sort of chucked it and spun and ducked and basically just quit on the play. And were the guys open or not? I mean, not the way Brady threw the ball. They weren't open. But if he was... a little tighter and a little hung in there just a little bit more by Brady's standards.
He'd find someone.
Well, they might have been Brady. Hogan. I mean, what I mean is Brady open. Like, you know, the window was tight, but Brady's a tight window quarterback. If he had hung in there a little bit more and just really, you know, stuck with the play, there might have been enough there for Brady to put him in.
Yeah, I was just looking to see the total number of dropbacks because Bedard has a percentage thing. Greg Bedard of Boston Sports Journal, right?
Yeah.
Where he says, like, once it gets into the over 30%, I think usually the Patriots are in trouble.
Well, when he gets pressured on over 30% of the snaps.
Right, but you just rattled off six hits, right? It doesn't, I mean, I don't know, maybe the pressure was higher than I think it was. I'm telling you, I thought Brady saw it coming before it actually got there.
I think it felt worse because Brady gave into it or played into it or, you said, sped up. He didn't do well with it, that's for sure.
Yeah, and look, some of them, I heard them talking about this on the midday show a little bit. It felt like there were more blitzes there than you might typically see against Brady, and usually he shreds that. And it doesn't feel like he's feeling that well anymore either.
They did all these delayed blitzes too, yes. Right? Like sort of, which is really Brady's bread and butter. Like, you're going to give me a whole nother count to diagnose where this is coming from? I'm going to kill you. So normally the teams that blitz Brady and devote extra pressure to him get shredded. Is he now dealing with that worse than he ever has? And is that now the game plan against him?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. And again, I wonder if this part of it relates to the personnel too. In other words, no Gronk, Edelman's out there, no Amendola. Clearly he doesn't trust Hogan because he doesn't throw to him anymore. And Gordon, who the hell knows? Like, I'm not even sure Gordon knows the playbook. So if you blitz Brady, where's he going with it? It's got to be Edelman or White. And if you're Tennessee and you take White away, which I thought they did an excellent job of, like, because White was a non-factor in that game, really. So now what? Now what are you going to do? And so maybe this all is part and parcel. In other words, maybe Brady is a little off, but at the same time, maybe he also doesn't have anyone to go to. It could be all the above.
Okay, back to your thoughts. Sam and Lynn. Hi, Sam.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I just going to disagree with something that you said a little ago. You said that Gordon had 12 balls thrown at him. Brady only throws to him when he's mostly in traffic. One was behind him. One he dropped. You also said Edelman had 12 thrown at him. I disagree with you, gentlemen. I happen to think that Gordon's a good receiver. He's a big receiver. He's strong. I think he's pretty fast. He may not be like Edelman. I think most of this is the timing with Brady. If he used to look one way and look another way. Then he'd look at some other way. All he did was look one way. Then when he looked the other way, he got rid of the ball or he fell down.
Sam, you're right about that last part. There's no question he's not seeing the field like we're used to seeing. On Gordon, I'll respectfully disagree with you, sir. I can't stand that style of player. I keep saying I can't stand Gordon. I don't know the person. This isn't a personal commentary. I'm talking about him as a player. I hate that kind of player. Because I see it, I see it a lot with Green Bay, with both Favre and Rodgers. Third down, get in trouble, just go back on your back foot and chuck it up down the sidelines, whether it's to Devontae Adams or whoever it is, and maybe they make a play, maybe they don't. But there's no real play there. There's no route. There's no diagnosing a defense. It's just sort of third down, oh, here comes a rush, chuck it. And that's what Josh Gordon is with Tom Brady. The low percentage, I just can't stand it. I hate that style of offense, and I hate that bailout. And I think Brady, Brady's doing it because I think in this game, he didn't want to take the hit. He didn't want to take the punishment.
I mean, I know Greg Bedard asked this after the game, but 12 targets for Gordon?
Ridiculous.
For that role on that offense, that's way too many. Hey, that guy's a complimentary player in their offense, the outside receiver. All you need that to do is to keep the defense honest so they don't just jam the middle of the field on you. All you need to be able to do is throw the 15-yard out there. That's it. And they're chucking him to him 12 times? 12 times. 4 for 12.
Ugh. Frank in Worcester. Hi, Frank. Meanwhile, you're bending over. I'm sorry. Meanwhile, you're bending over backwards to accommodate this guy. Right, he's showing up late. He's not where he needs to be, and you've got like a babysitter or a personal handler or something. As he said last week, he didn't deny that he was late. He says in those situations, they have someone there to help me. Oh, so now we got like a caddy. So you got to like totally flip what you are as a team in terms of work ethic and do your job and show up on time. Here's a guy who's still totally out to lunch, and instead of having nothing to do with a guy like that, you've got to now sort of shoehorn him into what you do. Which is just, again, I hate that thought of it. And meanwhile, on the field, I don't see what's so special. I really don't. He's big and still physical and will go get the ball in traffic, but he's not blowing by people. I don't feel like he's in condition. His hands suck, or they have, because his hands are hurt, I guess, or something. He's got a finger or something. He drops balls. He's inefficient. 12 targets, 4 catches.
Tell you what, I'm not giving him a break on the finger. I'm sorry, I refuse. On that ball yesterday, he still should have had
it. He's
got
to have that one. That one's...
You got to catch that ball. That ball's right there. You got to catch that.
Okay, I'm sorry. Frank and Worcester, go ahead.
Hey, no problem. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, just a couple quick points I wanted to make. I mean, this is nothing new from Vrabel. I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that the blueprint's out on how to beat the Patriots. I mean, Coughlin exploited this in their 2 Super Bowl wins against us. I mean, it's pressure up the middle against Brady, not letting him, you know, step up and make that throw. But, I mean, why isn't anybody talking about McDaniels? I mean, the play calling this year has been incredibly predictable. You can already tell he's trying to, you know, empty his bag of tricks with these stupid flea flickers and, you know, the throwback passes with Edelman. I mean, we typically see that stuff in playoff games, and now we're getting, you know, flea flicker central in week 9.
They're doing it because they're desperate. They can't trust themselves to move the ball. But the coaches were asked yesterday. They were asked, how does a guy like Josh Gordon get 12 catches and Chris Hogan, or I'm sorry, 12 targets and Chris Hogan only get 1? They did. They did ask the coaches. What did they say?
Yeah, you'd have to ask Tom.
Yeah, go ask Tom. Go ask Tom. The first answer. The first answer, Jimmy.
You'd have to ask Tom.
The one before it, where Greg says, how does that happen? How does Gordon get 12 and Hogan get 1?
Yeah, talked about this ad nauseum, Greg. Nothing's changed. We don't design passes to go to one guy unless it's a screen pass.
You think Tom was effective fine?
You'd have to ask Tom.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd have to ask Tom.
We don't design plays to go to one guy, so go ask Tom. The only time there's one person in the route is a screen pass. Other than that, it's up to Tom. Go ask him.
You'd have to ask Tom.
You'd
have to ask Tom.
He's dropping it right in the quarterback's lap. He is dropping it right in his lap.
He said it twice, by the way. Twice.
He did? So you weren't doubling up on that?
This is the raw tape.
Oh, you'd have to ask Tom. Yeah, you'd have to ask Tom.
Oh, for extra emphasis.
Why don't you go ask the quarterback?
He's freelancing. He's forcing balls. They're spite balls because he's mad that I went and got Josh Gordon for him. See, rather than him being happy I actually got him a weapon, Tom's mad at me. So go ask Tom.
You'd have to ask Tom. Yeah, you'd have to ask Tom.
I mean, again, I just ask you people, if you don't think there's something extra in there, or there's a layer to that. When has he ever called out a player singularly? If you asked Bill about some trouble they were having in pass coverage, have you ever heard him say, go ask Devin? I know he kind of threw Devin under the bus a couple weeks ago, but it wasn't in, you know, if the offensive line gives up some sacks, does he ever say, yeah, go ask Matt, like, go ask Logan? Did you ever hear him say that?
No.
If they're having trouble stopping the run, they asked about his problems in the middle with the defense. Yeah, you know, go ask Dante. You ever hear him say that with another player in another position?
No, no. In fact, his answer is almost always either it's a non-answer or he starts spewing, you know, the whole team defense type of thing. You know, it's a team offense, you throw to the open guy, or it's a team defense that requires everybody working together, all of that. He never does that. Never.
Uh-oh. Might have to batten down the hatches. Could be an old-timey Patriots poop storm.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
You'd have to ask Tom. Yeah, you'd have to ask Tom.
Bad timing for the loss. 2 weeks. 2 weeks of this.
So I can fester like a boil.
Does that grow like a fungus between your toes?
Like a mold.
No commercials here, just an update. Vic Chimuri gets you updated, and we're back with your thoughts.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.